All right, we're going to get started here. Thank you to everybody for coming out this morning. I'm sure we're all a little tired after the first night. Did you have a good time last night? Yeah. Having a good conference so far? I certainly am. Of course, this is part of the industry track. It's a little bit different than what we've done in the past. Now we've got these separate seminars. We had two yesterday morning. We'll have two today. This is best practices in homebrew retail, and then right after this, following this talk in this room, we're going to be having another talk. So if you want to stick around for that, a fellow by the name of Jeff Grant is a retail consultant. He's going to talk about some things you can do with your store to improve the retail experience. So I think it'll be another great talk if you want to just stick around for that. That starts at 10:15. Little introduction. My name is Jake Keeler. I am part of the AHA Governing Committee. I'm the chair of the Industry Subcommittee. I've also worked in the industry for a little over 10 years, at one point working for Northern Brewer, now working for Brewer Supply Group. So definitely the industry is something that's near and dear to my heart. And obviously, those of you who went to the State of the Industry talk yesterday morning, we've got some challenges right now. The market's not the same as it was 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 8 years ago. And so I think this is going to be a really great opportunity, this talk particular, to listen to some of these great minds from the homebrew industry here that we've got up on the panel and have a good question and answer session and hopefully some discussions following throughout the conference with these individuals. So before I get into introducing our panelists for this talk, really quick, if you've been to any of these talks so far, the antitrust guidelines for meetings, I'm not going to read these because I read them yesterday, and many of you probably already heard them. But essentially, we start talking about pricing. You know, if somebody starts to ask a question or having a discussion, I'm probably going to just kind of shut it off and, you know, move it on to the next question. Don't typically have to do that, but just keep that in mind. And also when you ask questions, think about, you know, does this have applicability to a larger audience? So the speakers today, I'll introduce myself. I'll be the moderator. We've also got Larry Clouser over here. He's one of our panelists. He's a sales manager for California North Territory. You can see the states listed out there for the Country Malt Group and also for Brewcraft USA. We've got Chris Opella down there on the far left. He's also one of our panelists. He's a sales manager for Brewmaster. Juno Choi over here on the far right. He's the marketing manager for BSG Handcraft, which is part of Brewer Supply Group. And then finally, David Stewart right here next to me. He's a national sales manager for LD Carlson. So I want to give a warm round of applause for these guys for being here today. I've known these guys for a long time. And like I said, I think that the information they're going to bring to you today is really valuable. I think that it's going to spark a lot of conversation probably here and then throughout the next couple of days. This presentation, of course, will be recorded, and this slide deck will be available at some point online, I think maybe in about a week or so. So, if you don't get the notes or you miss something, don't worry, you will be able to get this later on. Here's our agenda for the day. We're going to go through four major topics, and as we started putting this talk together, we thought these are really important things that we kind of from, you know, the wholesale and distribution side of the business think are really important things for retailers to keep in mind, are critical to a successful shop. One, how to attract new customers, and Juno Choi is going to take that topic. Second, building relationships and customer service. Chris Opella is going to take that topic. Products, quality, display, and rotation. David Stewart is going to take that. And then big one, education. Larry's going to do that. So each one of them is going to give about a 10-minute talk. We'll reserve Q&A for after that. And then we'll go through. So any questions before we get started? All right. With that, I'm going to hand it over to Juno Choi.
Good morning, everybody. As Jake said, my name is Juno Choi, and I'm the marketing manager for BSG Handcraft. Today, I'm just going to talk a little bit about some ideas to attract new customers to your retail store. And I think one of the big things, I'll give a little introduction to, so I've been working in the homebrew industry for about 12 years now. Started off as a retail employee with a company called Northern Brewer, managed their retail store there, and ended up opening up a few retail stores for them and now work for BSG. So I think one of the things that I wanted to bring up here is a pretty important part, this next slide here, which is the 2015 AHA Homebrew Shop Survey indicates that shops are experiencing slower growth than in previous years. So I think that's a pretty important thing to think about because I think the wind is no longer at our backs. Instead, it seems more like a headwind. Which that really means is we have to think about creative ways to work harder to get to attract new customers. I think the big important thing here, takeaway from that point, is that we have to be proactive in trying to attract new customers. I think you have to constantly ask yourself, what are you doing to bring new customers to your retail store and evaluate that? So you have to try a lot of different things. Some of them will be successes and some of them will be failures, but the big important thing is that you have to keep trying and kind of look at new different ways to bring customers to your store. Failures are part of the course when you're trying to attract new customers, but I think the big important thing is you have to try again. And the better you plan for the better you plan for them, set goals and track them, the more likely you are to succeed. So today I'm just going to give you a couple ideas, examples on how to attract new customers. And I've got a few handouts later, too, with some additional ideas. These are just fairly brief examples. Example one is hosting a free class targeting potential new customer groups. Larry will be talking about education classes later on, but I thought this was a good point to bring up here because I found this worked really well in bringing customers into Northern Brewer. So, and yes, I said free. Free is a big incentive. A lot of times you can still have paid classes to bring customers into your store. But when you're talking about paid classes, you're usually attracting a current customer base. And really the idea here is to target customer groups that you aren't marketing to right now. So I think really what you want to do is try to reach out to different customer groups. So you've got different groups that you aren't catering to, like woodworkers, barbecue clubs, coffee aficionados, and really reaching out to customers that you might have not thought about. And I think with free classes, you can have your paid classes, but these free classes can be a big incentive. So you just got to think about how you can market to these individuals and groups. Another example is to get in front of a wider audience and get on TV. A lot of people don't think that their business may be worthy of getting on TV, but typically local media outlets are starving to get news about your stores. So you want to give them beer is still in and homebrewing is still hot. So you want to give them specific ideas to get them to come to your store. So typically when you reach out to these media outlets, you want to give them some sort of event and something that's timely. So I've typically found out that when I reach out to these media outlets that if I have something that's based on, say, National Big Brew Day events or classes or demonstrations, they really are open to featuring you on TV. So I think in terms of getting contacts with these media outlets, it's very simple to do, actually. There's a lot of websites for your local news outlets that you can contact and get editors to reach out to, and they're quite responsive. So I think the thing is you have to be persuasive with them and give them something that is interesting, like these events. Another quick example is to diversify your product mix. So determine what customer segments that you aren't properly serving or aren't serving at all, and to cater to them. So if you're only doing beer, one of the things that I think you might want to try is servicing winemakers. Obviously, there's things like cheese, coffee, kombucha, and fermented foods. I think fermented foods is quite a vastly growing popular segment of new customers potential for bringing people into your store. So, and you know, if you aren't really an expert in these particular areas, I think you can rely on your current customer base or people that are coming into your store. A lot of them have experience, and if they're coming to your store asking for these products, I think you can go reach out to them and ask for help and assistance in what products to carry and bring it into your store. So I think the really big thing here is to just keep constantly thinking about what you're currently marketing to and what you aren't. And if you can reach out and try to think about those customers that you aren't currently serving, these are new potential revenue streams that you can bring in. I think really here when we're talking about slower industry growth, you really need to be proactive and try to think about what you can do and constantly try new ideas to bring those customers in. So I think, too, also targeting different groups or even localities to bring in new customers is something that we all need to think about in trying to bring in those new customers. So, try to get bigger exposure, get featured on TV or in newspapers, and identify those customers that you aren't serving and specifically cater to them. I've got a handout available, too, with about 15 other ideas to really just kind of get you thinking about new ways to attract customers, because I think with the current industry, we really need to work harder. Customers are no longer just walking in the doors. This isn't 2011 where we've had a lot of boom and a lot of exposure. So I think now, those people that aren't trying new things are the ones that are going to continue to suffer. Those that are really trying to expand their ideas and how to bring new customers are going to be ones that are going to have to succeed. I think probably one of the panels on hybrid shops probably showed a lot of that too, where you need to diversify and try to bring new customers in. So thank you, and on to next session. Chris here.
Thanks, Juno, and welcome everybody. In the olden days of customer service, all we had to do is start a store, hang out our shingle, and people would find us. In the homebrew industry, there wasn't that many of us, and the customers would just come to us naturally. It's a little different now. We need to find the customers, and now we really need to fight to keep them. I think there's two things that you can work with your customers in order to keep them in your store. First thing you want to do is create an experience for the customer. This is not just a shopping trip. They've made their mind to come up to your store. They have a preset amount of money that they want to spend. They're there to swap stories about the last brew that they made, maybe something that they're interested in. Then there's also some technological tools that you can use in order to give you information about your customers, to help support your sales, and to give you a lot of data that you can use. So when you're working to create the experience, you need to first listen to your customers. When I started working in the retail store, I used to focus a lot on price. I would always try to give people something cheaper or help them do something different. I've since learned not every customer is price sensitive. Maybe this guy just got his tax refund and wants to drop a lot of money. Maybe somebody has a tenuous grasp on their kitchen for homebrewing at home and they want to do wine or soda that would get their spouse involved. By listening to them and finding out what they want, you can help target what you're promoting to them. And we need to inform and educate our customers. Some previous surveys have shown that the best way to keep homebrewers moving up in the hobby is to teach them new skills, to advance them. All grain brewing, brew in a bag, anything that keeps them, their interest going, buying new equipment and advances them, it refreshes them. It gives them something new to look for, new books to go read, and so it's really going to keep their interest a lot more than if they just come in and you're just selling them supplies for their next batch. And we want the store to be a destination. I used to have a customer that would come by every time he dropped somebody off to the airport. And he wouldn't come in to buy anything. He'd want to talk, maybe sample a beer. And at first I was like, all right, why am I spending a half hour with this guy? And then I realized, no, I'm the lucky one. He's decided to come here. He's probably been thinking about this for days. After he drops the guy off, he's going to come play for a little while. That's exactly the experience that we want our customers to have. Then there's a lot of technological tools that we can use both to help our customers and to give us some information. So how many of you guys use an email marketing program like Constant Contact or something? All right, a good amount of you. The other ones that don't, look into this. You can get into the game for relatively cheap, maybe 20 or 30 bucks a month. And these email marketing programs give you a lot of information about your customers. We used to do a regular email blast from Outlook, and it didn't give us any information on how many people opened our emails, how many people clicked on some of the links. This is really valuable information. If you've ever wondered why nobody responded to that sale flyer that you had, if you have links on there and you can track it, these programs will give you metrics that are going to tell you how many people clicked on it, what exactly are they interested in. Then there's different times that you can send stuff. I used to send stuff at the end of the week because that was when I was slower and could send something out on Friday. That's the wrong time. You want to be sending emails out to your customers Monday morning, Tuesday morning, 9 a.m., 8 a.m. You want them to get this. When they arrive at work, they're checking their email, they've got some time to BS, or maybe they're taking their lunch break, they can look at some stuff and click on it. If you do it at the end of the week, you're going to get lost in the weekend shuffle. And there's something called A-B testing that a lot of the large marketing companies do. And this refers to sending two slightly different versions of a message and then using your metrics to see how many people clicked on each one. Maybe you offer a different price point on a kit, one for $100, one for $125. Or maybe you format it differently, where you put the header up at top in big, bold red, and another one, you have a different graphic that's up at the top. And you can see who clicks on it. All of the large marketing companies and professionals do some version of this kind of testing. This is how you learn things such as send your emails on Monday and Tuesday morning. This is where you get that kind of information. And then if you're not using a point of sale system, something that tracks your customers' usage, you're also giving up a lot of information. A point of sale is more than just an electronic cash register. Once you have years of history, you can go back and look at what is my dollars per invoice? What is the frequency that these customers come in? We saw in the survey that some customer frequency is going down from maybe 10 times a year to 8 times a year. But if the average dollars per invoice is going up, then you're doing good. You've got no issues. You can look at how often the customers come in, what types of the things they're buying. And even if you don't use it now, if you start collecting that data now, it's invaluable to go back 5-10 years and see how your sales have changed over time. So there's a lot of tools that you can really get some information from. Lastly is the tools that we have available to us as an industry. The annual survey I've really come to think of as one of the most powerful tools that we have as retailers. I've seen trends over the years, and we can see things in the interest that customers have for learning new techniques, where maybe there's now a shift towards more all-grain stuff. If you haven't been promoting your grains and your all-grain brewing systems, this is something that you want to do. We see a difference between brick-and-mortar stores only and stores that have an internet component. So even if you don't do online sales, if you don't have a shopping cart, get your website out there. Have some information for people to click on. You're missing anybody that does a Google search or looks for directions for your store if you don't have even a basic website or a Yelp and a Google listing. So all of these resources together give you a lot of tools. So if you work the two of these together, we create a positive experience for the customer, And then we have some tools that help us sell to our customers. You're going to create a win for your customers, and you're going to create a win for your shop. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Those are some great presentations. How's everyone doing this morning? Good. Everybody wide awake and ready to hear another presentation? So what the four of us are covering are some basic topics to build your homebrew business and your retail store around. We obviously, these are probably 45-minute presentations that we're boiling down into 5-10 minutes. So all of us as distributor reps are available to you after this throughout the weekend or even after the fact to answer any questions. And as Jake said, this is all available as well. So we may be rushing through a few things, but we wanted to give you some kind of basic guidelines. What I'm talking today about is retail store sets and displays. So that's basically the customer experience within your store. So it has nothing to do with internet sales or education or anything like that. It's basically what your customer sees. So an overview of store retail experience. Today's competitive retail market demands a quality retail presentation. You guys in the last 10 years particularly have done a great job of elevating that. I think we need to continue to do that. And really, if you want to boil it down to what the basic things, when somebody walks into your store that's never been there before, what you want them to see is that your store is clean, organized, you have proper signage, spacing, and lighting. Though if you hit those things, you're off to a good start. So if you're a newer store, you benefit from a blank canvas, right? You can see what other people did wrong, what people do right, pick and choose, and build your store that way. If you're an existing store, it may be a little bit more difficult to reinvent yourself, which you don't necessarily totally have to do, but step back and evaluate maybe what areas of your store need to be completely overhauled and modernized, and what areas of your store just need a little bit of a tweak. So take a look at your store footprint and what your customer sees with a fresh set of eyes. And what does that mean? You walk into your store every day, probably spend more time there than you do at home, and you see the same thing, you get blinders on. So go into your store when it's closed, turn your cell phone off, turn your computer off, no email, no employees, no issues. Don't look at your sales from the night before. Go in with fresh eyes and walk the store and see what your customer sees. And if you have too much blinders on, another great idea is to get a friend or someone else you know within the business to go into your store and do that for you. And they'll give you information that you were missing. So the next thing to do would be to create a store planogram with goals for implementation. So if you don't have a plan, revamping your store doesn't do any good. So this is a nice example of a store. It's Brew Hut in Colorado. And as you see, it's clean, it's organized. You can't really see the signage, but everything has a sign in front of it, a little sticker, and it just provides good lighting and a good customer experience. Okay, that's probably a more fancy planogram, but it basically means is if you're going to remodel your store, you're going to move things around, do it on paper. It's a lot easier to redo it on paper than it is to move fixtures 2 and 3 times. So why reset your store layout? Probably the biggest reason is to compete with national retail chains. These people are pros at store sets. They optimize flow and product placement to maximize sales, and they're very, very good at it. And so homebrew retail, we can compete with this professional retail if we just take a look at how to present our store. What you want to do is focus on your customer needs, not yours. So lots of times we'll walk into a store, we'll see it set up that it's convenient for the employees or it's convenient for the store owner and not for the customer shopping experience. One thing I used to run into a lot was you'd walk into a homebrew store and the first 3 feet was a wall of beer and wine bottles right in front of you. And I would ask them why they would do that. It was like, well, it saves time. We don't have to walk to the back. We don't have to carry them when we go out to somebody's car so far. But it's really off-putting for the customer to come in to see that. So you want to combine the customer shopping ease with product placement. So the product placement is for you. You know, put what sells best in the right areas to maximize your ticket sales. And then emulate a grocery store reset concept. this is kind of my crude example, but grocery stores, you see they tweak things, they do end caps, but then about once every two, three years, they will close down overnight and they will totally move everything. And when they do that, they do it for a reason. Because when you go into, when I go into a grocery store, I have my 15 items. I'm a guy. I'm on a mission. I'm going to get in. I'm going to get out. Get my 15 items. When they reset the store, then you know all of a sudden the paper towels aren't where they were. So you have to walk the whole store, and you fill your shopping cart with stuff that you hadn't seen. So don't. A lot of stores say, "Well, if I move stuff around, it slows my customers down. It's an inconvenience for them. It's a benefit for you." Because you slow them down, you make them look at everything and not just the packet of yeast that they came in for. So who is your competition? I think if I asked any of you individually, you would say the store down the road or the internet, the other homebrew store. Whoop, what's in the picture? There we go. I like to think that this is your main competition. These are big companies, Home Depot, Lowe's, Bed Bath & Beyond. I could put 100 up there. They are fighting for your customers' dollars just as much as you are. So I would keep in mind that they're very good at what they do. So if you elevate your customer shopping experience, they're going to spend money in your store. Because if you don't, and Lowe's and Home Depot did a great job this spring, and your customers have a great garden, they spend all their money on that, there's less they can spend on homebrew. So store set strategies. I'll just go through this real quick. The entryway clear with a 10-foot buffer. So I know ideally that's 10 feet is a lot for you to give up. And if you think if I have 10 feet of blank space in the front of my store, I'm wasting that floor space that I'm paying for. But when people walk in, you walk into your store, you'll see it differently. When someone walks into your store new or from experience, they need space to take it all in. So you need to provide them with that buffer space. Flow movement to the right. So you don't want it to be a jigsaw puzzle where they don't know which way to go. If you can push them to the right and they walk around, they'll get through to see what you want them to see. Why do we flow people to the right? 90% of people are right-handed. It's psychological. They walk to the right. Power wall to the right. A power wall is to me, it's just basically, it's your largest display wall. And if your store flows left, it flows left. But it's your largest display wall. And you want to put either a wall of wine kits or a wall of your beer kits on there. Something that tells people what you do. Another saying is walk past the steaks to get to the milk. Grocery stores don't put the milk by the front registers because you'll come in, get your milk, and leave. So what you want to do is let them walk by that Blickman three-tier system when they come in to go get back their kegging part back in the back of the store. And then smaller high-price items near the register. There's not a lot of theft and shrinkage, but I bet if you put your expensive kegging parts out of the way, some are going to find their ways into pockets. So, and then the main thing is taller shelving along the perimeter, lower shelving in the middle. And what that does is give people sight lines so they can see the entire store. Lots of times you'll walk into a store and you'll see 8 feet of aisles. And it's like a library. It's great for a library, but it's not good for a retail store. So keep your windows displays. You know, I think this is kind of a thing of the past. I would keep them clean, rotate them, basic, a wine press, you know, an all-grain setup. Don't try to put everything you offer in your store in the window because people just won't get it. So this is an example of a different industry, but that I would say their power wall. This store sells backpacks. They sell a lot of other things, but when you walk in and you see that wall, you immediately know what that company does. So this might be an interpretation for our industry. This is a wall of wine kits, and you can tell that they're in the wine kit business just by looking at that. And then that would be the steak in the front of the store. You put that out. I have a customer near me who has a Blickman three-tier system past his 10 feet right when you walk in the store, and he's had it there 2 years. And I said, have you ever sold that or sold one? He said, no. You know, and 10 years ago, that would be the end of the world. That's an expensive thing to keep on the floor. He said, it's a toy. He said, I don't care if I ever sell it. It has people know that I'm in that business. I can get them Blickman stuff. So it serves its purpose for him. So this is a good layout of a store where you see the aisles. You know, people aren't bumping into each other. You got a big distance, shoulder to shoulder. They have the bigger displays on the end and then the smaller ones in the center. So product arrangement. Basically, you arrange your store how you want, but I like to have a beginner area, and that can be an area where you take a deconstructed equipment kit and ingredient kit, so cheese making, beer making, wine making, have it out of the way so that it's not right where a lot of the flow is, so that your employees can spend time with the new customer explaining the process of whatever fermentation product they're looking to do. You can also do almost like a mural or a poster that you can create that takes them through the brewing process. So what is that? That's a silent salesman. So when all your employees are too busy to help them while they're waiting to get explain what homebrew is, you can kind of look at that. And then you set up your displays that are what's permanent, what they can count on, and what rotates features that you may want to feature in and out. Double product displays. As we get bigger, you saw a couple of those store shots. You guys are getting big in your retail footprint. So what I would do is you may have all your beer kits on a wall, but you may have a separate area of the store where just your beer of the month, your beer recipe kit of the month is displayed so people see it and have a visual in two different areas. I would create a draft center. Draft is huge, part of the business, an area for your books and publications. Impulse items near the register, but don't overcrowd the register. We walk into a lot of stores, and there's like 17 different things on the register, and it's overwhelming. Just pick two or three things you want them to buy and say, give me that. All you see is candy bars at the convenience store by the register. You don't see 20 different product categories. So quality grain display in a dedicated grain room is a must in this environment. So that's a general retail store, but you see the nice clean counter. There's nice signage. It looks like a nice place to check out. That's an example of some kind of mural you could do that explains the brewing process. This is a great grain setup, again, from the Brew Hut in Denver. They're one of the first to do this with these bins. They're expensive, but doesn't that look good? I mean, somebody comes in and they realize these guys are in the grain business and know what they're doing. Product presentation and rotation. In today's day and age, fresh product is key to educate customers. To educated customers, because they know what they want. They know how to read the date codes on a wine kit. They know if a grain is fresh or not. They're used to looking at lettuce bags in the grocery store and finding the freshest one. You know they do that with your yeast, right? They rifle through and they find the most current one. So you really have to make sure that you rotate your stock first in, first out. Hold back any new product or packaging. So if, as wholesalers or manufacturers, things change, hold back that new product till you sell the older product. And then zero in on your min-max inventory levels. So if you do that, you will minimize the amount of old product you have in your store. But you'd have to try to have most of what that customer wants. If you have four or five things they come in for, 9 to 10, depending on the size of your store, that keeps them in your retail store experience. Clean product areas regularly. Stores are getting better at that. Grain makes a lot of dust, and homebrew store owners typically weren't the cleaning type. So I would have a register. A regiment in place for cleaning, and then label professionally and with the standard. We're seeing more and more of that, so it's not just kind of high school labels that you put on your products. So register and mill placement is probably the thing that we see come up a lot. You need the open space near the register and the mill out of the way to minimize dust, but you also got to start to think, when do I need a second mill? When do I need a second register? Because it really your customer flow. And think about when you need a second mill or a second register, looking at the busiest part of a Saturday. Don't think about it on a Tuesday morning when nobody's in your store. So if you think customers like waiting in line to check out, they don't. You know, I've had customers, and I say this delicately, say, oh, no, it's homebrew, it's a hobby, people like hanging out. Well, they do when they get started, or they do when they have some time. But if their wife's in the car, or their kid has a soccer game, or they got to cut the grass, they want to get their packet of yeast, or they want to get their can of malt, and they want to get out the door. So here's DeFalco's in Houston in one of their stores as a separated grain room. So this is a good way to have that area off and set and keep the grain dust away. This is just a general retail store that has a really nice, airy, large checkout area. And then to finish, creative ways to extend business. And these are some of the trends we've seen as we travel around and visit shops of what you guys are doing. There's a lot of combination shops, garden center / homebrew, but most of you are, homebrew is your life. It's your business. It's how you make your money. So we see a lot more classes and workshop areas within the store. Brewery tap room and store combination is quite common now. And then a winery. We see tasting bars, wineries combined. Most recently, I visited a store that had a coffee bar in it. That was brand new. I hadn't seen that before. and then a play area for the kids, whether it's a puzzle or it's something more than that. So this is obviously a classroom. You probably can't dedicate an area that large, but a way to instruct people. And then this is a shop in Florida. So that's the brewery part of their business. These are people enjoying a beer from their seven-barrel system. But what you don't see is behind them, open air, is the homebrew shop. So people can go right from the tap room to the homebrew shop. And you can't underestimate what two beers do to their purchase patterns. And then this is a store that added a winery, kind of a big project, but there's a winery within the store. And then this is the same homebrew shop with the winery, and they've actually had an area where they can set for events, and I've done consumer events with them there, and it's a really cool way to get people in and keep them attracted. So this is what was in the background. This is kind of going to the max. They have one of those bouncy rooms, so my mom's at the wine bar tasting wine, dad's buying his homebrew kit, the kids are playing and getting the exposure to the barrels in the back. So training them young, get those mental images. So, okay, and then this is the coffee bar, New Jersey Keg and Barrel. They're coffee enthusiasts. They put in that, I don't know how expensive machine, but it's not just for them. They have local people come in. It gives their business exposure. And then on Saturday, they find it keeps customers in the store more because they get a coffee and they walk around. So that's it. Thank you.
All right. Good morning. So I'm going to be covering education this morning. And I guess the best way to start it off is, what is education? A lot of people think it's a organized classroom only, but to be honest with you, education is your opportunity that you get to show others how things are done and get them excited. If there's one thing to take away from my presentation today, that's probably it right there. That's going to sum it up. So if you don't get them excited about it and they don't see how easy it's going to be to do it, they're not going to want to do it. Other ways of think of as far as education is AHA events, great ways to teach the public that are new, whether they're already homebrewing or not. They may be just driving down the street and see your parking lot full. Great way to teach people about the industry and get them involved with it. Of course, classes and functions not associated with AHA events. And it's important to keep a diversified lineup of classes. Stop thinking about just homebrew or beer making and think about other things, especially with homebrew stores carrying all sorts of things now compared to what they used to. So other things that work great are community events or workshops. There's a homebrew club or a homebrew shop, I should say, that's in my neighborhood that these guys do some really good things. They target avenues that a lot of the guys don't, and it could be anything from a do-it-yourself clinic down the street at a neighboring business or at a festival. These guys will have booths there, and they'll go through everything and walk people through how to do everything. Naturally, a homebrew club, and I'll talk about that more, but that's also very important as far as education and supporting it. And then, to be honest with you, it's every day in the store. Every customer interaction that you have is an educational opportunity. So when they ask a question, or you ask a question, if you don't ask them questions or answer their questions effectively, chances are they're not going to buy anymore. And by you asking them questions or answering their questions, it's going to help you to understand that maybe they're really not buying what they need or what they want. And it gives you the opportunity to walk them through some things and increase your sales and make a happier customer. So I was just saying a few seconds ago, think outside of beer. A lot of the stores that are very, very successful are offering classes on a lot of things other than beer. So I interviewed a couple stores while I was putting this presentation together, and I actually went back to the store I used to work at, and they gave me an interesting number. But according to them, they say approximately 90% of all cider customers are new. They're not homebrewers. They've never made anything. And when they see how easy it is, they're walking away purchasing something. So don't know if that percentage rate's the same for you guys, but I thought that was an astounding high rate and a good target market to look into. Do you offer different levels of classes? Yeah, it's important to have both entry-level classes to get the new people in, but it's also important to support your customer base that's already homebrewing and offer advanced classes. Once again, it's important to show them how easy it is and also to get them excited. Especially with the new classes, not necessarily your advanced ones, but with your new ones, if you try to cram in too much information, you can scare them away. It's not important to cover every single detail. That's what you're there in the store to do later on as follow-up, or there's books for that. But once again, don't go too in-depth. Just show them how easy it is. You're probably going to be making a kit anyways in an intro to homebrewing class, so it's the best way to do it. If you haven't noticed, there's a little key thing going on. It's getting them excited. So, yeah, once again, most important thing, getting them excited. I've actually attended classes at other stores just out of curiosity how they're teaching them. And I got to tell you, I already know how to brew. But when I'm in there and all it is just facts, it's pretty boring. I mean, I walked away and said, I don't want a homebrew right now. I mean, literally, that's a great way to scare them away. I mean, so, number one, if you're not smiling and you're not getting them excited about it, then, to be honest with you, you're not doing your job right. This is your opportunity for your store to succeed. So, your potential is huge for every new person or somebody that's there for an intro to homebrewing class. These are the people that are buying your starter kits, your other equipment, ingredient kits. More so, dollar per customer return on these classes is probably more or higher than your advanced homebrewers that are there to learn more. So as far as advanced classes, it's important for customer loyalty. If you don't offer something to continue the education for your homebrewers that are growing and learning, they're going to go elsewhere. And the chance or any opportunity that they have when they go into a new store is that store's chance to snag that customer for you. So your goal is to keep them from going to other stores by offering them the education that they want and they need. The other thing is, too, is happy advanced customers or advanced homebrewers that are your customers also tend to refer people to your store because they're happy with the products and the services that you're offering. It's opposite of the beginning of a beginning class in a lot of aspects, and that this is your opportunity here to go over a lot more in detail of everything, probably review some of the introduction stuff that you had at that time and go over more details of that and answer a lot more questions. The goal of a class, to be honest with you, I know maybe some of you are cringing at this, but shouldn't necessarily to be make money on each class. I see a lot of stores who want to charge a very high amount for classes, and their thought is, well, I've got to make my money. But to be honest with you, your goal isn't necessarily to profit off the class itself. It's to profit off of their business that you're going to get from the class itself. So it's important to charge for the class. Free classes, if you haven't noticed already, tend to have a lot of cancellations. They don't see the value or the importance of a free class, or they don't think it's a big deal not to show up. But when you actually charge them something, doesn't have to be a ton of money, but when you charge them something, they take it a little more serious, and they're going to come. It's kind of like when I was in school when I was younger, I didn't care about classes. I got not the best grades when I was in high school. But when I went to college and had to pay for school on my own, I was a straight-A student. I was in class every day because it was important to me. It's the same thing with homebrewing classes. If you charge them, you will probably not have very many cancellations, and they're going to fill up, by the way, too, a lot more. And then what we used to do also, and this works great, is what you do is you're charging them a small amount or an amount of whatever it is that to get into the class, but you're offering them in that class, you're offering them a gift card, basically, that's good for that day right after the class, and then you're getting them to get that money back, basically. So you're saying we're offering 10% discount on anything in the store today only after the class for attending the class. So it's not really a loss to you because you've charged them for that class. So you're recuperating your costs in that aspect, and it's a value to them to use that day to buy right after the class. They feel committed to buy something, and they definitely see value in it, and less chance of them not getting started with homebrewing. So I talked about it a bit ago. Community events and workshops. Does your community have festivals that you can be part of? Do you have breweries or cideries or meaderies? You know, anything that's out there could be kombucha or fermented foods. Is there any company that's out there that does it on a commercial basis that has a huge following? Can you partner with them? Is there an event that you can come in and hold a, have a booth? Or maybe they want to come to your store and hold an event, and they can actually be your guest trainer or teacher that day. It's kind of a new thing that, to do, but it works great, and it actually brings the whole community together in that. Arts and crafts fair, these are your do-it-yourself kind of people. Festivals, fundraisers, but do-it-yourself events are huge. Those are the people that are willing to actually make something rather than just to go buy it prepackaged in a bottle at the store. Homebrew club. You know, a lot of stores, I've noticed, don't actually have homebrew clubs. Or maybe it's not that they don't have one. Maybe that homebrew club maybe meets at another store, but they don't offer anything for that homebrew club to come in and shop at their store. I think that homebrew clubs are probably one of the easiest ways to offer education and perceive value with your customer. And the great thing about homebrew clubs is a lot of times you're not even having to do the work. It's the club themselves that actually takes care of the education. You're just offering them a space to use at your store possibly, or you're giving them something in return. So the question is there one in your area? If not, highly suggest you start one. And if there is an existing one and they're meeting somewhere else, doesn't stop you from offering them a discount as well, so they come into your store and shop around. Other things to do is, like I said, you can sponsor them by allowing them to use space for your meetings. You know, if they want you to, assist with the training and education for the club, but at the same time, let them lead it so they don't feel that you're controlling it. And what it does, it definitely brings people in the door. So every contact with a customer is an opportunity. You should talk to your customers. If you have an employee that's there, and to them it's just a job, and all they're going to do is ring up a customer and let them leave out the door, that is a huge missed sales opportunity for you guys. If you're not talking to all your customers, even if it's just saying, "How's your day? What are you brewing?" Those are the kind of questions that are going to open the door for you to ask more things and find out what it is that their needs are, and it gives you an idea of where this customer is going in the future. If you don't have staff that is trained or knowledgeable, train and make them knowledgeable. Or show them the door. To be honest with you, I've seen this. I've been to stores, and to them it's just a job. And it reflects on your business. If the customer doesn't think that you know what you're talking about, they're probably not going to want to ask you questions or buy from your store. So the most important thing is make sure that your staff is qualified, first of all. If they don't homebrew when they get the job, make sure at least that they have an interest in homebrewing and they start homebrewing and learn. And make sure that they're actually answering questions correctly. So every customer that you don't talk to is a missed opportunity and a possible missed sell.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chris, Larry, David, June, and now we'll open the floor up for questions. There's a microphone in the middle of the aisle here, so if you do have a question, I just ask that you come and ask the question there so that it's recorded as part of the program. So if you just want to line up, you have a question, please do so. Any takers? Yes. All right, at least a couple.
Yeah, I'm the icebreaker. Good morning. Sorry I was here yesterday, but I'm new to this. So question I have is, yesterday morning you mentioned how there are homebrew clubs that are kind of organizing and buying product collectively. I have a thought. How can we as shop owners, if we're kind of in close proximity to one another, has there been opportunities where we actually collectively buy in bulk from our point of view to maybe bring prices down or give us a competitive edge that might make it helpful for our end line? So I guess that's a question collectively, or maybe if you all have thoughts on that. That's just a thought.
I'll take it without. So I'm gonna answer this in a way that isn't pitching one of our companies over another. I think I'm speaking for the group here that I'm sure all of us offer a program or have a program that's set up that the more you buy or the more you spend, there's discounts involved with that. I know what the company that I work for, we have programs. You know, we don't, and I don't think any of us here at this table actually allow or set up to where we sell to homebrew clubs directly. But what we like to do is we like to work with you guys. You are our bread and butter. We want to help you grow and succeed. So what we do is when we get somebody who calls that, we like to say, have you called your homebrew store? Have you asked them if they offer a discount? And we will work with the stores a lot of times on certain programs or incentives on things. So I think all of us here probably do that. I don't think there's one is different necessarily than the other in that aspect. So yes, we would encourage you to do that. Homebrew clubs, as you saw in my presentation, are probably the most underlooked resource for you to grow your business. They are huge. They will help keep you going. They'll volunteer at your events. They'll do your training if you want. These are huge. So yes, we would love for you to support them and sell to them. And we also want you guys to stay in business at the same time and help you guys out. So we always would love to work with you guys on that. So most definitely.
Good. Just add one thing. We encourage the stores to do it. We don't sell to homebrew clubs, but we encourage the stores to, you know, maybe can't talk about the M word or the D word, but to answer your question about buying together, our policy is you get your price advantage for you. If you have multiple stores under the same ownership, you get that. But we don't do five stores go together on a certain thing to get a certain price.
Next question.
So I saw that you guys made mention about, you know, the importance of having a website and stuff like that for having an online presence. But one of the ideas that I'm trying to play out in expanding sales and diversifying is doing some like minimal online sales. You know, don't have the capacity to be like More Beer or Northern Brewer. But do you guys have any thoughts on what a small shop can do to have, like, you know, actually drive sales through the website or actually do sales through the website locally? I don't know if you guys have any comments or ideas about that.
I would say there's a lot you can do to provide sort of an entry-level service. I see a lot of stores that have an opportunity to not even have a full line of homebrewing supplies, a liquor store or something that might have starter kits. And I could see the same thing with a website. Something to just pique people's interest. You offer one starter equipment and ingredient kit or something like that. Almost any website hosting company can help you set up a basic shopping cart, so you don't need to know the programming. Just choose a few key products to get people started and get them in the door, and then from there you can work with them. So yeah, I don't think you need a whole web suite and everything online. You get up there with some basic minimal presence, and then you have a starting point.
And I think just to add to that, I would focus on your Zone 1 UPS. I think you'd be surprised how many people will mail order a beer kit within 60 miles of your store because they don't want to drive to the store that day. So focus on your customer base and your local, and even people outside your customer base. You know, I try to buy local whenever I can. So if I find a company that does something that's in my area code, I try to support that. So I would focus on that and let the national guys do the national thing.
And two things I would recommend. Do your homework about what the fulfillment is going to require. So you're going to need to fulfill these orders, get them out the door. You're going to have shipping supplies. You're going to have a contract with UPS to come do a pickup. Or if you got a pickup, put it in yours and you take it to the UPS store at the end of the day. But do your homework on what that overhead is going to be with the fulfillment side. But it's a great idea because when people are searching for homebrew supplies, if you don't have a website, number one, you're not going to index very well on any search engine. And the more content that you have on your website, you know, if you have a homebrew kit for sale, now that has a product page, that page will start to index with searches in your area. So even from that standpoint, it's very beneficial.
I don't have a question so much. I was going to just share an observation I had from my experience. I'm in a small town, about 19,000. for marketing. I found what's helpful is the home show. We don't have local TV, remember, they're a local radio station. They sponsor the home show, and they liked having a homebrew store there because it gave something different from gutters and windows and more diverse. I'm trying to think of where I can get a large group of people from a diverse population in one location. Usually that's in early March, and then in early fall, there's the county fair. Your local homebrew club this year is planning to flood the fair with beer and wine entries because they find out it's allowed, it's fermented beverages. I'm sure it changes state to state, but that's two ways where I figure to get a big group of people in one place for good exposure, and our fair event is going to allow us to do a brewing demo at the fair. So that's a couple of different ways I think it's a good way to branch out. You mentioned some other Rotary clubs and things. I've done that also, and it's a I thought I'd share that to me that's been successful in a small town to get word out to people that don't use the radio or read the paper and things. So.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, it's a great
idea.
Yeah,
hi. You described and showed great pictures of wonderful-looking homebrew stores, but most of them were pretty good-sized. Do you have any suggestions for the person who has a hybrid homebrew store, maybe 800 to 1,000 square feet? How can you merchandise that without cluttering that up? How do you, what would you suggest?
I think one thing you might want to need to do is take a look at what's actually selling and utilize that small footprint. So if you've got a small footprint here and you can tend to track at least what those customers are purchasing, you know what's going to work or not, and maybe need to switch out those displays one at a time. So maybe you can't display everything at once, but you can use a certain area to switch out and constantly try to see, hey, is this working or not? And rotate products that way.
Maybe. Yeah, and if you have storage space elsewhere in the back of the store, or if you have a warehouse, or you can put the most of your carboys and cases of beer bottles in there and just have one set example out on the showroom floor as a way to do that.
And don't underestimate the power of the marketing and the retail display. And we're going to hear more about this in the next seminar. But I know of one store that was relatively small that was purchased by another company, and they brought in new displays, they brought in new supplies, and within 4 to 6 months, they had doubled the sales over the previous store. This was in the same location. This was a very small store, maybe under 1,000 square feet, same location, same clientele. And just professionalizing the displays and increasing the variety of equipment had a huge impact to where the previous owner probably would have thought that this is just the way that it is. This is what our customers buy.
And I'd like to just, to that point, reiterate something that David had talked about. You don't see it as much now, but you do still see it. The stores, when they have that limited space, they seem to be arranged for the employees and the owner, not for the customer. And by that, I mean, you don't need to put every single beer bottle or every case of beer bottle out there so you can hand it to the customer. You just have to have a beer bottle and then a sign that says sold in these quantities. Now, if you have the storage space, then all your inventory can be kept in back stock. Now, that requires you to walk in there and a little bit more of work, but it opens up the retail floor. You really shouldn't use the retail floor space for storage, right? So you got to think these are that the retail floor space is for selling. It's for interaction. It's for education. One more question.
Okay. Sorry. I have a very small homebrew store. I service the El Paso, and we're just up and coming in the homebrew. We're just starting to get a lot of people. Started it not knowing if it was going to be something that was going to work out because there's no demographic for it, but it's supporting itself, and we had a 1-year lease, and we're in like an office or business park, and I'm trying to decide if it's worth the risk to go to like a big commercial property or along the freeway where my rent is basically going to triple in order to be seen by all of these people. But then right now, like I said, I'm on that line. I couldn't afford, $200 extra a month, let alone tripling it. And I hear from some people, oh yeah, if you go, where people see you, you're going to get twice as many customers. But I find that when people come to me, they're there to buy homebrew stuff. When I do get the occasional, off the street person, they like to look around, but then they leave. So I don't necessarily want those, you know, not interested people that I think I might get if I move.
Right. And so the question is really, how much is location a factor to see
exactly.
your success?
Exactly. Yes.
I'm sure you guys have some opinions on this.
It's a destination business. Now, as we get more mainstream, it's a little bit more than that, but it's primarily a destination business. I would never triple your rent in this environment. Maybe 3-4 years ago, I wouldn't even triple it. I would double it and go for a bigger space. I think more space is more important. You don't see a lot of homebrew shops in shopping malls because they're really expensive, and you guys got to watch your bottom line. So I would take it smaller than larger and not worry about ideally, if you're 2 turns and 2 miles from a freeway exit, that's great. But if that doesn't work out, I wouldn't do that to your rent for that.
All right, I want to give a big, warm thank you to all of our panelists today. Thank you, guys.